This talk is about how you can watch movies from a Netflix-like service without anyone, not even Netflix, knowing which movie you watched. The reason we want a privacy-preserving media delivery system is that a lot of people are uncomfortable exposing their media diet, especially to a centralized server like Netflix. And this is because knowledge of a person's media diet can reveal sensitive information, like sexual orientation, political leanings, and cultural affiliations. We have three specific requirements. First, privacy. The system must hide the content of clients' requests. But what about Tor, an anonymous communication network that hides who the client is instead of what it consumed? The issue with Tor is that it is a heuristic solution, and there are attacks that can reveal the identity of the client. So what we want is provable privacy. Second, low cost. If the cost of serving an object in this system were to be translated into dollars, then it should be a small multiple of the cost of a non-private system. And third, compatibility with existing commercial media delivery services. So the system must reuse and build upon existing content delivery infrastructure as much as possible. And it must respect copyrights and other controls on media dissemination. And we want these to increase the chances of adoption of our system. In attempting to meet these three requirements, our first step is to turn to protocols from cryptography known as private information retrieval, or PIR. These protocols allow a client to retrieve an object from a library of objects kept at one or more servers without leaking any information on which object was retrieved. These protocols are promising because they meet our first requirement of provably hiding the content of requests, but not the other two. The biggest issue is that of server-side overhead. For each request, the server has to process the entire library. Because if it doesn't process a particular movie, then it knows that the client wasn't interested in that movie. Second, there is a tension between overhead and content protection. Specifically, there are two types of PIR protocols. The first type has lower server-side overhead, but it requires two non-colluding servers in distinct administrative domains, each with its own copy of the library. Disseminating content to a different domain is in conflict with content protection policies of commercial media streaming. The second type of PIR protocols do not have this issue, but the server's overhead is high. And finally, there is an issue of applicability. PIR assumes that all the objects in the library are of the same size, but the sizes of media objects vary, owing to different playback times. But by exploiting the properties of media and by tailoring PIR to media delivery, we have built a system popcorn that addresses all of these issues and meets our three requirements. In particular, the per request cost to serve an object in popcorn in terms of dollars is 3.87 times that of a non-private system. In the rest of this talk, I'm going to give you a brief background on PIR, and then I'm going to describe the design of popcorn and how we tailored PIR for media delivery. Okay, onto the background. So there are two types of PIR protocols, and I'm going to go into the details of one of them while only giving high-level properties of the other. So the first type of PIR protocols are called information theoretic PIR, or ITPIR. These protocols require more than one server, each with a copy of the library. They work as follows. Let's say that there are two servers, server one and server two, each having a library with five movies. And for concreteness, let's say that these servers are Netflix and Akamai. Then the client that wants to privately retrieve one of these movies does the following. It generates a random list of movies and gives it to server one and asks it to XOR those movies together. So in the depicted example, the client asks server one to XOR M1, M3, and M5. Now to the second server, it gives the same list except with one difference corresponding to the movie that it wants to watch. Let's say that movie is M3. Then if 3 is included in the list given to server 1, it is excluded from the list given to server 2, and vice versa. The client gets the replies from the server, XORs those replies, and gets back M3. Why? Because M3 was input into the mix of XORs only once, while the other movies were input twice, canceling them out. ITPIR protocols are secure under the assumption that the two servers do not collude. If the two servers collude, then they can figure out which movie the client watched by looking at the difference of the lists. But otherwise, each server independently sees only a random list of movies from which it cannot deduce anything. In terms of other properties, ITPIR protocols are relatively cheap because the server-side operations are cheap XORs. However, the two servers combined have to read from disk and XOR all the movies for each request. I'll get back to this issue later on in the talk. And third, ITPIR protocols do not respect controls on content dissemination. And this is because in order to prevent the two servers from colluding, they're put in different domains. But that means Netflix will have to give a copy of its library to Akamai. The second type of PIR protocols are called computational PIR or CPIR. They do not have this content dissemination issue, but the server, instead of doing cheap XOR operations, has to do expensive operations, like modular exponentiations. In practice, the state-of-the-art CPIR protocols are 5 to 10 times more expensive in terms of server CPU time compared to the state-of-the-art ITPIR. So given these two PIR protocols as a starting point, how are we going to design a system that is low cost and that respects controls on media dissemination? Well, Popcorn's first design step is to somehow use ITPIR because it has cheap operations, but while respecting controls on media dissemination. And to do that, it composes CPIR and ITPIR. So the data owner, Netflix, creates an encrypted version of the library and then replicates this encrypted version to the second server. Each object is encrypted separately. Then these two servers use ITPIR to serve encrypted objects to the client. Meanwhile, Netflix retains the keys that it used for encryption in a key library and then serves these keys using the single server CPIR scheme. This composition ensures that Popcorn has cheap server-side operations because it uses the lighter weight PIR, which is ITPIR, to serve large media objects and uses the heavyweight PIR, which is CPIR, only for the much smaller cryptographic keys. This composition also ensures that Popcorn respects controls on media dissemination. And this is because the plain text content is never given by Netflix to Akamai. Only the encrypted library is replicated, and while Netflix retains the keys for the content. But this composition does not address the issue that for each request, the server has to process the entire library. So to address this issue, Popcorn's second design step is to batch requests. Recall that in ITPIR, a client generates a random list of movies and gives it to the server, and the server replies with the XOR of those movies. Now, since this list is generated randomly, on average, it contains half of the movies in the library, which means that to generate the reply, the server has to essentially scan its entire library. Now, if another request comes in, then server has to do the same thing, scan its entire library to generate the reply. And again, the same thing with a third request. So observe that the server is doing the same I/O work for each request. So instead of processing these clients individually, why don't we group them, process them together while scanning the library once? This batching will not only significantly reduce the I/O overhead at the server, but it also saves CPU cycles because the server's computation can now be expressed as matrix multiplication, which has better cache locality than doing vector matrix multiplications. Okay, so Popcorn has an interest in batching requests and forming large batches. But how should these batches be formed? Well, one strawman design is to group all requests that arrive at the server during a given a fixed time interval, which we call an epoch. So let's say that the horizontal arrow represents time, and the vertical arrows represent requests coming into the server. So divide time into epochs and group all requests that arrived during an epoch. These requests will be serviced during the subsequent epochs. Now, from the client's perspective, this looks like following. Initially, there is a delay during which the server is trying to form the batch. And in the worst case, this delay equals the epoch time. And then the client simply downloads and plays back the chunks of the media object. The client's worst case client perceived delay is then the epoch time plus epsilon, where epsilon is the time it takes to download the first decodable chunk of the media object. Now, coming back to the server, there is a choice on the epoch size. On one hand, it can choose a small epoch, but that will give it small batches. But on the plus side, the client perceived delay will also be small. On the other hand, the server can choose large epochs, which will give it large batches, which is desirable, but the client perceived delay will also be high. The issue really is that there is no good size for the epoch that gives us both a small delay and a large batch size at the same time. To address this tension between wanting large batches and a small delay, Popcorn leverages streaming. Now, I'm going to present only the very high-level intuition here, and there are lots of details and analysis in the paper. So let's revisit how the client actually streams a movie. Initially, there is a delay during which it downloads the first decodable chunk of the movie. And then it needs the next chunk only at time D plus T, where T is the time it takes to consume a chunk. And it needs the next chunk in time D plus 2T, and the next one in time D plus 3T. Now, observe that the client only needs the first chunk immediately, and not the later ones. And the server can exploit this fact. To keep a small client perceived delay, it can configure the first chunk in the low delay, low batch size setting. And meanwhile, it can grow the batch sizes by configuring the later chunks in large delay, large batch scheme. And that is okay because there was room for high delay in the first place. This arrangement is inspired by pyramid broadcasting, a video on demand technique that was proposed in 95. Okay, so until now, I've been assuming that all the objects in the library have been of the same size. To handle media objects that vary in sizes, Popcorn observes that media can be encoded in multiple ways, for example, by changing the bitrate. So to make a larger object of the size of a smaller one, it simply compresses it by reducing its bitrate. So how much do all of these techniques help? In this part of the talk, I'm going to present the quantitative benefits of Popcorn's techniques. And to do that, I'm going to compare it to the following baseline systems. A non-private system that simply serves chunks of media objects using an Apache web server. XPIR, which is a state-of-the-art CPIR implementation. Then a state-of-the-art ITPIR implementation that is modified to support streaming. I'm going to simply refer to this system as ITPIR. And then CPIR and ITPIR extended with the Straumann epoch-based batching scheme that I had described. I'm going to compare these systems for a Netflix-like library, 8,000 movies, average movie length is 90 minutes, and each movie is encoded at 4 megabits per second. The workload will be 10,000 clients arriving within 90 minutes, and this workload is modeled on the workload of modern media delivery systems. And finally, I'm going to report estimated per request dollar cost, and to do this estimate, I'm going to measure each request, CPU, I/O, and network overhead, and then charge these resources from a pricing model derived from Amazon EC2s. So if we simply use the heavyweight PIR, which is CPIR, to serve objects, large media objects, the cost is really high. It is 265 times that of a non-private system. And the reason is high CPU and I/O overhead at the server. For each concurrent request, the server needs 12 CPUs and 64 gigabits per second of I/O bandwidth. Now compare this to the I/O bandwidth of modern hard disks, which is just 1 to 2 gigabits per second. Instead of using the heavyweight PIR, which is CPIR, if we choose the lighter weight PIR, which is ITPIR, then because of cheaper operations, the CPU time comes down, the CPU overhead comes down a little, and so does the dollar cost, but it is still way too high. Batching can help us amortize this cost. So if we extend ITPIR with the Straumann batching scheme that I had described, then the CPU and I/O overhead comes down drastically, and so does the dollar cost. The data point that I've shown here uses an epoch of 15 seconds, which means the worst case client perceived delay is 15 seconds. If we are willing to increase this delay to, let's say, 10 minutes to form larger batches, the overhead comes down to a point where the dollar cost is a small multiple of the cost of a non-private system. But 10 minutes of playback delay is really high. We know that modern media delivery services only take a few seconds to start playback. Well, Popcorn can claw back this delay using its batching scheme, but while keeping a similar dollar cost. I'm going to quickly go into some related work before concluding. So there is a lot of work on PIR that tries to improve the performance of PIR, looks at the content dissemination issue in ITPIR, handling variable size objects, and there are numerous PIR implementations. We borrow code and techniques from these works, but none of these existing works address the issues that we have in Popcorn. So to summarize, I asked the question that is it possible to build a media delivery system of the scale of Netflix that is low cost, that is provably private, and that is compatible with commercial media streaming? The answer seems to be a cautiously encouraging yes. And Popcorn does this by tailoring PII to media delivery by exploiting the properties of media. In particular, the per-request cost to serve an object in Popcorn is 3.87 times that of a non-private system. That concludes my talk. I'm ready to take questions.
Brian Ford, EPFL. Very nice work. Interesting. A question about your experiments. So you have a library of 8,000 movies and 10,000 clients watching them, right? What's the distribution of the clients' movie watching patterns? Are the clients just kind of picking one of the 8,000 movies at random? So the point is, in a real system, that distribution is going to be highly skewed toward popular movies, and you'll get caching benefits which you might be losing. Did you look into that?
Right. So in our experiments, the client requests movies according to a Zipfian distribution, the index that they put with the parameter 0.8. Mm. In reality, since the system is provably private, the cost of the system does not matter on which movie you select. But yeah, for concreteness, we chose a Zipfian distribution.
Yeah, good. But the point is the comparison, the baseline comparison would benefit from the Zipfian. And so are you accurately modeling that in the comparison?
For the baseline of non-private system, we give it zero CPU and zero IO. We say that, not even Zipfian, all the requests are for the same movie so that there is maximum server-side caching benefit. So we give the baseline maximum benefit.
Okay, thanks.
So, Ratul Mahajan, MSR. I was kind of wondering, since you make like being able to fit into current commercial setting as one of the primary goals, so I was kind of listening to you talk, I wonder in what ways that has changed. For instance, if Netflix doesn't know what movies being based, if Netflix has to pay the content owners, right? So if it doesn't know what movies are being watched, how does it pay the actual owners of content? And the other is just from the customer side, now do I have to subscribe to both Netflix and Akamai to just watch a movie, or?
Your first question is, I'll try to reframe. Yeah. So the first question is, how do you do statistics so that Netflix can accurately pay the licensing entities? And that problem is not fundamental. There are ways to do privately, securely calculate aggregate statistics. Aggregate, like if Netflix knows for each individual user, then some privacy is lost, right? But it can still, in principle, get aggregate statistics, and we have some citations in the paper on how to do that. Your second question was
do I subscribe to both Netflix and Akamai now?
Or? No, you do not. So right now, also in commercial media streaming, actually Netflix at some point used both Akamai and other CDNs to deliver. We do not explicitly subscribe to them.
Wait, but right. Netflix is paying money to Akamai and other CDNs, right? So presumably it owns the logs of the services being accessed.
Right, so we will...
So it can ask Akamai and Limelight for client logs. So there's not even, because, these are Netflix service access logs, or are you somehow trusting that Akamai refuses to hand over logs to Netflix, despite Netflix paying them money for content distribution?
So I don't think I understand the question, but the pricing model is that the user will only subscribe to Netflix, and then Netflix will make the payments to Akamai.
Luis Pamios from Western Digital. The problem I see here is that in your economical model, you assume that iOS, the cost of iOS scales is constant when you scale the system. So if you already have your system at a fixed size, taking advantage of the Zipfian distribution, how would you be able to extract all the new bandwidth that you need?
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, in Amazon, you can just scale out at a constant cost per IO. But in theory, if you're Netflix and you have already your system, the number of IOs you have are limited. So what do you do then?
So the question is, how do I handle workload changes, for example?
You already have a fixed system, so you cannot increase your available IOs unless you just double your data center or something like that.
The question is on elasticity, right? On workload changes or something like that, how does this system cater to this workload changes, right?
So more economical, right? You're assuming I/O price is constant regardless of how many I/Os you're making.
Yes.
So that if you own your system, you are not using Amazon, that might not be the case.
I guess I'll just have to take this offline.
We can take it offline. Thank you.